In this episode, I spoke to a panel of successful women in the fashion industry at Soul House Hong Kong to celebrate International Women's Day 2023. Hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Powerhouse series at Soul House. So today we're going to be talking to very successful female entrepreneurs in the fashion industry, and we'll talk to how they, you know, get started, what are the challenges, and especially how did they reinvent themselves in the past few years. So let me introduce them. And so we have three panel speakers, and one will join at 1 o'clock. Lucy Petit, founder of the Hong Kong Model Camp, if you can join us there. And Susanna So, founder of S9, and Sarah Fong, founder of The Hula. And I'll leave it to them to explain their business as well. And I'm Joyce Yeo. And Ariane from Rue Madame will join at 1 p.m. So we'll get to chat with her as well.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Joyce, for this great introduction. My name is Lucy Petit. I'm a model in Hong Kong and the founder of HK Model Camp. We create empowering experiences to help women mostly and teenagers to build their own confidence and self-esteem using modeling as a medium to do so. But we are welcoming everyone to participate as well, although we have a focus for teenagers and women mostly.
Hi, my name is Susanna Su, and I'm born and raised in Hong Kong, and I started my brand S9 by Susanna Su 2009. My passion to drive this brand is also to empower women and also want to bring inspiration and light to women through my design. So
my name is Sarah. I'm the founder and CEO of Hula. Hula is an online platform for the resale of designer women's wear. So we're a consignment store, and we have a shop on Hollywood Road, and we also have a warehouse in Wong Chuk Hang, where we have thousands of amazing pieces. So come and see us. We're actually moving to Quarry Bay in April. So by May, hope you can come and visit us. It would be a massive space.
So with that, maybe you can give a bit of a backstory, right? How did you come up with the idea of starting your business, and some early challenges in starting a business?
Origin for me of HK Model Camp was a mix of my own growing as a model as well, going through all these experiences that sometimes, you know, you get through a lot of rejections. You are being told sometimes that you do not belong, or there's some certain stereotypes and standards that are set for you. And although beauty standards are changing over time, it is something that sometimes we all struggle with. And although they may look at you as model or like one model that have a certain characteristic, I realized that there was a lack in representation in Hong Kong and in general. That's something that we've been wanting to break away a bit as well from these stereotypes. And I went to New York back in 2019 to go to Coco Chasch Model Camp. Coco Chasch is a supermodel, Canadian supermodel, and she really opened my eyes and broadened my perspective in terms of what's doable in the creative industry and how much it could evolve from that point. And I really wanted to bring this back to Hong Kong and create something on my own as well that makes an impact on people and hopefully contribute to making this place a better world in that sense, to allow women to really express themselves artistically as well, and that no matter who they are.
In my background is not in fashion before. I graduated in Carnegie Mellon for information systems, and I work at a web design as a web designer and web developer in New York. All changes when I was thinking about, like, you know, down the road 5 years later, what I'm going to be like. And then I realized I don't see myself in the IT industry. And then I started going to sewing classes in the garment district and started to kind of like learn a bit about, you know, like the construction of the clothing. And then it kind of resonates to me from finding the fabric, sourcing the fabric, feeling it, imagining what it would be like. And then that's kind of, I suddenly opened my eyes and realized this is how I want to express myself. This is kind of like my creative channel. And all of a sudden, like, it feels like my life comes back to me. It didn't require any courage or struggle, like, for me to decide, like, I want to go on this path. I just instinctively know that this is where I'm going. So I was talking about a decade ago, and now I'm still here, loving what I do, and I still have that original passion, excitement of when I find the fabric, when I kind of hearing and
seeing that creative energy of making a piece come to life, you know, nothing I regret from that moment.
So, thank you.
I was actually born in the UK. I did a jewelry degree. As soon as I finished, I started a jewelry business. And so I then dropped the jewelry and did lingerie. And like Susanna, I had no training at all. And we just designed fun things. So we were selling at Lane Crawford, Selfridges, Henri Bendel's, lots of really great stores. But I had zero business acumen. I didn't know what I was doing. I was pricing things completely wrong. I was not making any money. I soon gave that up. Lane Crawford offered me a job to work in Hong Kong. So I came here. I worked in the creative department under the creative director. And I literally learned so much about corporate life and about the business of fashion. And I was there for 9 years. I noticed how much waste there was in the business. And because I had come from a design background, I knew especially how much effort it takes to make things, to produce them and to market them. And I also had that side that I knew the work that it took us to market these pieces. And the sale seasons seemed to get shorter and shorter, and people were producing more and more products, and it just seemed crazy. And in London, I was actually shopping secondhand anyway. So I was like, hang on a minute, why isn't there any secondhand shops in Hong Kong or, you know, businesses? And I had a bit of a research, and I realized that there wasn't anything here that was kind of stylish and cool and elevated. So I decided to leave and set that up.
Wow, amazing, amazing journey. And
interesting that for me, I've realized during the pandemic, like especially workwear. So I was working as a model full time before. I'm still working as a model nowadays, but focusing more on HTML camp. And I've realized that in the pandemic actually made me reflect a lot on what I wanted to do. I mentioned as well before, like meanings of life, right? Purpose of life. And I think that in a weird way, I'm not sure if the business would be where it is today if the pandemic wouldn't have stopped me from like continuing working as a model and having that break to really, you know, assess what I want to be doing, what would be the next step for me. In terms of challenges, I think it's mostly about like being back and forth. Like the fact that myself personally, as a model, everything stopped, right? I used to work with a lot of international clients who would not fly back in town. So you have to find ways to adapt as well. So a lot of things that turn online as well. I remember the first Zoom meetings or doing shooting catalogs on the phone with like a team of four people, because we were limited to doing that. So having even working with the fashion director of Vogue Hong Kong for a shooting together, and was literally just himself, the assistant, one representative of the clients, and myself that we shot on the phone. So it was interesting to see what we could develop as well to make this industry adapt to the pandemic. But I think the takeout from that as well was more about a self-reflection on what's truly important to you and what impact you can have for the business in general and on people.
You mentioned before, and I think it's great, like, because when I first saw, you know, your business HK Model Camp, I thought it was general modeling, but you mentioned it's really for regular people. I mean, I'm sure it's everyone, but also like teenagers, regular people that want to kind of, you know, maybe have a better self-image.
For me, that's what's the most rewarding thing, is that we don't necessarily need to be working with models. That's the whole point of that, is to bring modeling skills and making it more accessible to everyone. So we did mention we focus mostly on teenagers and women, because I can relate it myself to when I was younger, when I started modeling and I had, as you girls mentioned as well, like no particular training in this field, and trying to understand how I can make it work myself without any knowledge and not knowing what to do as well. And I remember myself being not confident at all when I was 15 years old and getting in this career. I wished back then that I would have had someone to be able to guide me in the right direction. So that's why I find that really interesting, to be able to mix personal development with modeling and enhance your confidence skills and self-esteem by just learning how to be more confident in front of the camera, getting a better posture, and getting the skills that can take you further, whether it's if you're interested in modeling career, why not, but mostly for yourself, for your own personal development and professional career as well. And we do enjoy doing that, is like to really trying to bring the model in you, no matter who you are. We have worked with working women in finance, working women in IT, and I love breaking away from this usual standards of what a model should be, right?
Susanna, maybe you can speak about, you know, the past 2 years, some challenges and any changes you have to make in business?
Actually, looking back, I remember 2020, January, it was before COVID actually rolling out. And I wrote an article in LinkedIn talking about how I reflect on the 10 years of starting my brand, that whole journey, and thinking of like how to be more conscious as running a fashion business in terms of using materials that are more sustainable, thinking of the way of producing and selling it, which means that I actually switched to not holding a lot of stock. I become actually doing a lot of the like order event, like even with direct clientele, I would have like maybe a small, medium, large, or sometimes just like a medium large for people to try it, and then they can order it and then expect it to arrive within 2 to 3 weeks. I communicate this with my clients, and then they are very supportive of this, knowing that this is also helping to keeping the whole business, the whole exchange, very sustainable. But through those years, I actually lost myself numbers of times because I have to be so many things to so many people, and I forgot what I actually really want. And I guess like during the COVID time, it actually even, have that opportunity to really think essentially what I should let go, what I should leave behind. Started thinking in that way really helped to clarify what is really essential in my path as a designer, as a founder of running a brand. Last year, I closed my showroom that I had for 10 years. I had my first showroom in 2012 and began an online offline platform. So I would launch my collection in hotel suites, and I would go travel also in Hong Kong and in Tokyo, in Singapore. I would travel to launch my brand that way and connect with my customer and get feedbacks. And that's how I run my business now. And although it's a very small scale business, I'm at my happiest in my life.
That's great. I was going to say, it sounds like there's some downtime, or when there's change, it's a good time to, you know, think about it, reflect, and, you know, do something different, or how you can make it more efficient, right? Your life and your business. And of course, in case, make yourself happier too. I mean, that has to start from yourself, right? Also, Sarah, then maybe your take on this.
Actually, it started in protest, I guess, 2019, and things started getting a bit scary. I only had like 3 members of staff then, so I put them all on part-time. And then when COVID hit, it was just like, oh my God, like, are you kidding me? I don't think I can survive that and something else. Actually, it was interesting because with COVID, because everybody was here and locked in essence, we actually did okay. People were finding new ways of shopping. I think pre-owned fashion had just started getting into the limelight. Because of COVID, sustainability was also at the forefront. And we had by then anyway opened up our warehouse, so we were getting busier there, even though it wasn't always foot traffic. But the thing that COVID did manage to provide on the plus point was that rents really went down for us, and we were able to finally have a shop in Central where we may never have afforded it before. And it was a huge risk, actually. Like, my husband was like, you cannot be affording that rent, you can't do this. And I was like, you know what, if I don't do this, I will die. So it's do or die. So I'm going to risk it, and I'm just going to do it. And that's how I've always done things, because if I look on the flip side, it doesn't look that great either. So I just think, what's the worst thing that can happen? And what is the basically best of two evils? So I went for it, and it's been great ever since. Last year was actually very challenging, just because I expected it to be better, and everybody was very uncertain. Hong Kong was just very uncertain. And so I think you could feel that, but I already feel it bouncing back this year. The other thing we also did was, because we were a local brand selling mainly to local clients, we then started selling to different marketplaces like Farfetch. This was a game changer for us, because we were then able to get out and sell our stuff to international clients when our website was very shitty and not really working that well. And we've got a new one now, so it's fine. Then our website wasn't really functioning too well, and people were not really making orders there. So the majority of it was offline, and having Farfetch and some other marketplaces like that really helped us. And you can also, from that, collect data. You know, you're like, oh, who is shopping pre-owned and what are they buying? And from a very kind of powerful technology, like, you know, other people's websites. Yeah. So yeah, so it was good to do that.
Great, thank you.
So we have Aria here, George just joined.
Hi.
Aria Zagorit, founder of Rumadam Fashion Group. Thanks for joining us. So we're going to just start off just letting us know about your fashion group. How did you get started and why did you start the group? And yeah, we'll go from there.
My company is called Rumadam Fashion Group. We have about 170 employees. We operate about 65 points of sale across the region and about 10 brands and 4 online platforms. I was in banking in London and I moved here in 2018, pregnant with my first child. I now have 4 kids in case I forget to say that later.
Wait, 4 kids between 2018 to now?
Yeah. No, 2008.
Oh, 2008.
No, okay, that's how it works. So I moved here in 2008, 6 months pregnant, expat wife. And I was like, I'm going to work. And people are like, yeah, okay. And then so I started looking in finance again, but I never loved it. I did it because it was challenging. It taught me life because that was probably the opposite of who I was. And I think to start a career, to do something that is very challenging for you is a very good way. I started looking for a job in banking, but there, 2008, Hong Kong, a lot of luxury, a lot of fast fashion, nothing in between. Whereas in France, you have all brands starting to boom. So I opened a shop like this, really without thinking. The only thing I thought about was, okay, how much am I going to pay? How much am I going to lose if ever I fail? Am I willing to do it? Because nobody can tell you at the beginning what you're going to make, what you know with your cost structure. So that was the deal. I went to my husband, I say, I don't want to make money in banking. I don't want to take care of my child full time. And I want your money to start my business. And this is how much it's going to cost you. I mean, it depends on everyone's situation. In our situation, we were still able to send our kids to university in case I was failing. But there was a very clear line in case that was not working, where to stop. But that's how I started my business. I didn't know anything retail. So in the first 6 months of my Rumadam Fashion Group business, I had no staff because I couldn't find any staff. So I was the salesperson, I was the cleaner, the buyer, the accountant. I was everything. My job, how can you understand retail if you are not in your stores? No way. That was the most important moment of my career, being in my shop, meeting people, understand Hong Kong, understand retail. And actually all my Hong Kong friends, most of them, I met them there at that point. Sorry, it's been long. I was about to open one shop in a random location and the landlord changed his mind. Thanks, God bless that guy. And then another location in Elements, but in 2010, Elements was dead. And someone I met tells me, no, open in Lee Garden. I was like, Lee Garden, really? But then actually it was a very good choice.
What is the biggest challenge? I mean, so the first is you had to get into retail, so learning that. What are some of the criteria that you kind of start bringing on new brands? How did you evaluate and bring them on?
So to speak about bigger challenge, I mean, we are just out of protest and COVID, I mean, retail. Yeah. I cannot count the number of challenges we had, but that was one, but we had a lot. And if you ask me for my business and probably my emotion, protest was harder than COVID. Protest was really tough for us because it involved our staff safety, and you don't joke with that. First of all, I think it's about value and it's about numbers. Fashion is actually a difficult industry because it's sexy, so a lot of people want to work in fashion. But at the end of the day, it's an industry, it's a business, and you need to know your numbers. We know where we are, we know what we need to do, and we pay attention. The numbers are important. So for me, it's a mix between 3 things. One is number. One is integrity. What are your values? What do you want? What are you bringing? I do this job because I like people. I sincerely like people. That's who I am. I do that job because I want to make people happy. So this is the core of the business. Sincerely, I prefer that you come to my shop and that you live happy with nothing, that you live with something, but you are not very happy. And client, in my industry, in fashion, and people create things because they think it's pretty, but they don't think about the client. Who are your client? What are you trying to do with them? This is very important. And then for me, the last part, I said I'm a people person that also involves my team. So I'm extremely proud that a number of our team have been with us for more than 10 years now. People say in Hong Kong, people are not loyal. That's not my experience. So my team is very, and through the hard time that we had the last 3 years, I really did the best to protect the team.
And you have so many different locations. How do you keep it consistent though? Because you have different brands and different type of brands. You want to keep everyone happy as well.
My first store was Rumeda, which is a concept store. I really hope you all know it. If you don't, please visit us. We have 5 stores in Hong Kong and we have, I would say, the best selection of beautiful international brand and great product, because I'm also very much about product. But then very quickly after, we moved into operating monobrands. So you probably visited some stores that are operated by us, but you don't see it as like Sweaty Betty or Hobbs or Whistles or American Vintage or some other brand. In the past also, I think that's an important point. We also operated other brands that we sold. Also, actually, the exit is part of an entrepreneur life. All these brands, I think for me, what was important, I mean, the way we select big partners, they are forcing. Not for Madame Bai, but for the biggest partner when we open shop with them. Number one is the people, the management. The issue with that is actually changed over the years. When we sign the contract, at least we try to find brands that we really like the management. Number two is the product. Is the product bringing value to someone's life? Some brands are going to target the very cool young people. Some brands are going to target maybe less cool, but women that actually are fantastic women and I want to make them happy. So is the product addressing someone? Number three is, are they big enough? Because if you operate in Hong Kong or Singapore, China, you better be big to be able to run the operation. The fourth thing is, do they have strong shareholders to buy us back one day? That's it.
So we talked a bit about sustainability in fashion, and I know you're a big proponent for that, and of course, something that's your business as well, right? As circular fashion and sustainability.
When I first started the consignment business, I didn't actually realize the detriment of fashion on the planet. It was only when I was starting it and I was starting to look at some of the angles and the conversations and meeting people that I was like, oh my God, it's the second biggest pollutant in the world next to oil. The fashion industry actually makes it very difficult to find those details at first because obviously they're making so much money. The last 10 years or more, fast fashion was also gaining speed. This was a big reason for me doing this business. I mean, the first reason obviously is just repurposing this because this is what I love to do and I hate waste. And then the second one was the sustainability aspect. And, you know, if you think about how like it takes over 10 gallons of water to make the cotton for one pair of jeans. The energy it requires is similar to driving 80 miles in the car. And that's a very long way to go for a pair of denim jeans. So when you look at it like that, once we know the facts, we can then hopefully, you know, be a bit more conscious when we're actually buying something. So I feel like having a business and having something that is a second goal, sustainability, and actually makes me get out of bed easier.
Any advice for consumers, how they can be more aware and also help towards a sustainable kind of fashion cycle?
Just think before you buy. I'm not saying that people shouldn't buy new things. I just think people should be careful about buying things that fit them, or knowing your style is something that really can help you do that so you don't walk home with loads of things that you don't wear. I think invest in a stylist if you can. Get your capsule wardrobe sorted out. Try and invest in like materials like silk and natural materials that might be easier biodegradable. I think the difficult thing with materials is that when they're all mixed together, like synthetics mixed with cotton, mixed with silk, these are really hard materials to break apart, which means that they're difficult to separate and go into recycling. So that's the problem. And even donating your clothes isn't really the answer, because what they end up doing is they end up shipping it over to places in Africa where they have so much product already. They have bales and bales and bales of fast fashion where they don't even know what to do with it themselves. And they're selling it for sure, but we're also impacting their designers and their products because they also have designers that they want to champion. But you know, people keep dumping waste on their land and they have too much of it now. So it's not what they want, basically. It's too much. I mean, we're all human. And of course, the easiest thing is to never buy anything, right? But we're never going to want to do that. We want to look good. We want to feel good. It's, you know, it's also for our mental health. And so for me, buying secondhand solves that problem. I say secondhand, pre-owned. You can have fun with fashion still and do it consciously. But yeah, like I said, you just have to think about what you're going to do with that product afterwards. Like if you buy something, then just make sure you can resell it afterwards. I think that's also a thing, you know, like if it's a good brand, you can resell it. If it's Zara, you might not be able to resell it again. So, you know.
Got it. Well, thank you very much. I think I want to ask, well, before you mentioned, like, you know, going to finally getting back to production in China, going to be able to see it. And so maybe talk a little bit more about the supply chain side or the production side as well. What are the challenges? And again, how kind of what are the things you have to do differently?
Throughout my whole career, I guess, like, I have tried every single thing that a designer or a brand owner tried. Like, first, I did showroom in New York. So, like, an agent represent my brands. And that's how I mainly focus on getting wholesale orders. So I would work with the factory that make a set of samples, maybe two to three sets of samples to showcase to, you know, a few of the showroom that represent my brands. And then when I get orders, then I will produce, like get the orders to produce. Like that's kind of like the traditional textbook way of running a brand back then. As I've been trying many different ways to do things as a business owner and designer, I find out actually the best way for me to do it is to go direct, which means to actually work with my clients. Slowly, I tried different things. I realized actually I'm really the best working directly with my clients. That way I actually can do a lot more deep work. Like that's actually kind of what I want to do. Even as a person, I'm better with one-on-one than in like a big group. I'm not very like a socializing person. I like kind of thinking deeper into one subject. But actually I was coming to a point that I started to work with my factory a different way. It's actually not really a factory, it's more like a workshop, because they also don't take in like large orders. Like we work with like a small order, which is very fortunate for me and a lot of designers that's just starting out, because it's very difficult to have factory willing to do your samples and like not getting a huge order. Later on, I was saying that I wrote this article about fashion, running the fashion business differently in terms of like, you know, only doing the sample and meeting directly with the clients and get order that way. I produce even less because I was, you know, thinking of reinventing my own way of doing the business and see how it works. Like, I mean, of course, it's not very secure also for both the factory and for me, but eventually, we both find it to work, because definitely a lot higher price, like basically that the price of making the pieces will be much higher for me, like but the course, but of course I can also reduce the stock that way. So we test it out and I realize it actually worked in that sense, even though like I'm paying each piece like a very high price, but then I don't have to, you know, like produce a lot, and I can also do like a lot of the custom things in that sense. So like in terms of creativity, that is helping me a lot as well. Like I don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over again. When things work, I don't have to produce like 100,000 pieces. I can still like, you know, do different creative things.
Yeah, do small batches. There's not a lot of waste, and just what we talk about, sustainable fashion, right? And materials, like great materials, so that's something that can last. So it's all in kind of the same theme as well. So great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
So yeah, just maybe, I mean, you spoke to it a little bit before, but then kind of just elaborate a bit more, you know, to your transition from modeling to your Hong Kong, you know, model camp. And again, I really like the idea that, you know, helping regular people, you know, learn some modeling tips to also help improve their self-image, become more, you know, of a secure person. So again, can you, yeah, elaborate a little bit more about that process?
One thing that we're quite proud of in that sense for HK Model Camp is that we're, as mentioned before, really trying to break away from this standard, right? And having myself been in this industry for way too long that I'm thinking of it. I started modeling when I was 16. I'm 30 now, so it's been quite a long journey.
Very young.
Yeah. I mean, it took some time, don't get me wrong. Like, I started at 15, but things only really took off from when I was 18, 19, because as mentioned before, I didn't have the self-confidence, a lot of doubts as well. And that's something I've realized has really helped me personally express myself, in the sense that I wasn't able to use words sometimes for it, and being able to find other ways of self-expression, such as modeling, or, you know, dancing, acting. We talked about it earlier with Sarah and Susanna about, you know, using fashion as well to feel good and, you know, look good, feel good. That really is something that is needed for everyone. And I find that interesting that sometimes we do get a bit of a backlash from people when we introduce what we're doing, because they always tend to think it's only for models. Our goal is really to bring the model in you even if it's just for a few hours, for you to feel good, for you to develop that self-love as well, just self-acceptance as well, and loving yourself a bit more. And I think that's needed for everyone, not just for models. And that is something that personally I've struggled with back in the days, especially because, you know, when you're in this industry on a professional level, you do sometimes have agents or bookers who do tell you that you are too old or too fat, where I was 23 and you had 4, you know?
Yeah.
So it really puts things into perspective, and that's something that we need to shift from, because everyone should be represented. And I find that a bit sad that, you know, you have to conform to what some people may be thinking of this ideal beauty standard, when we know for a fact that they kept on changing over and over. And what your beauty of standards may be nowadays may be totally different in 10 years. So why changing them now if you know that in 10 years that may change again?
What are some of the ways that you can your market or talk to different groups or collaborate?
So I think we're really trying to push as well forward, and perhaps as well collaborating with brands who share the same values and that do have a wider representation. So like, you know, we've talked about wider range of sizes, for example. It is something that for us, perhaps that when we started the branding, it looked too much like it is for models to turn you into a model. And that's something we're trying to really break away from. And so far we've mostly work with whoever, where the client's joining in. And that's interesting to see that there's still not enough diversity and we want to be more inclusive. So that's something we want to really be shifting from now on to represent more people. So everyone in this room is invited to attend HK Model Camp. It'd be a pleasure to have you and be able to be part of that journey together.
Awesome. Thank you. Looking forward to seeing more. Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, it's an amazing idea. And as you said, definitely. I mean, I think during the pandemic, we have a mask on and, you know, and sweats at home. And now I'm out today with great clothes by S9. And then, you know, and we were doing a photo, you know, we were doing some portraits earlier. And then you gave me some tips. And I'm like, wow, I'm feeling good. So I think, yeah, everyone, you know, could bring out the model inside and just feel good and confident and just walk out, you know. So I think it's much needed. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, everyone.